Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. You're listening to Up North News.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun.
Welcome back to the third hour of Up North News for this Friday, September 9th. Hope the holiday shortened week was a good one for you. On the lighter side of the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, I am reminded, now that her son Charles is assuming the throne, I'm reminded of a comedy monologue by Kathleen Madigan. I actually saw it perform here in Madison once. Absolutely one of my favorite comedians of all times. And she noted, and this was some time back after one of the previous popes had passed away, that when somebody assumes the papacy, they get to choose their name. Are they going to be, you know, like John the 23rd and Pope Paul the 6th? And then there was John Paul the 1st. And she noted that there was at one point, way back, a pope who took the name Hilarious. He was Pope Hilarious for whatever reasons that name involved at the time, and said that she would hope that it's her brother or somebody in her family was a priest or something, and wanted him to someday become pope and become like Pope Hilarious the 2nd. And I thought about that when I did not realize what Charles would take, and you know, would he take a different name? And I didn't know what number he was, because I'm really not up to speed on my, you know, British monarch history. But so it's going to be King Charles III. But I wondered if he would have the ability to pick whatever name he wanted. And since everybody thinks he's, you know, all stuffy and everything, why not take the name Hilarious? He could have been King Hilarious. That would have been very good for the monarchy. But instead, he's going to go with just boring old Charles. Christina Laurie, my colleague at Up North News, joins us now and to talk a bit about things that aren't as serious as we often have to cover, which we're happy to cover. You know, it's politics, it's policy, it's a rough time. And Christina's the one that kind of keeps our perspective and says, you know, there's still a lot of cool stuff out there to talk about. And Christina does that for us in a segment called Uplifting. How are you, Christina?
I'm good. How are you, Pat? I wish now that Charles had asked us what we would like him to be. He never weighed in on Wisconsin.
You know why? You know why he didn't? Bucky? You know why he didn't? Because of that whole Bodie McBoatface thing. Can you imagine if they?
Oh my gosh, I remember that. That was a story that never ended. Kept getting more and more ridiculous.
I mean, he would have ended up with, you know, Chuck Bobuck, or you know, just Chucky McChuckface, or it just would not have been
well, or the snarky people would come out and, you know, try to throw like Diana's name in there.
Ooh, yeah. Nope, there's too soon. If you're talking about the monarchy, democracy probably isn't the thing that you want to go with here. So we
broke away for a reason.
Exactly. So tell us what you've been up to, not just the stories, but just the overall section that you're bringing to our coverage, because again, these are not the, I don't want to sound like we're going through the dark ages and the plague, but these are not the happiest times. And yet there are still plenty of happy and good people out there that you like to tell us about.
No, I'm just spending part of the week with my grandpa, and I was telling him, cause you know, my grandma had passed away in 2017, and you know, whenever he gets sad about it, I was like, hey, at least she missed kind of like the worst period. Nobody ever says like 2017 to current day. I don't think those are many people's like best years of their lives. So, hey, if you think of it that way, makes it a little easier to stomach. But that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to bring in those better times and realize that not everything is so bad. So we've started an entire new section in our newsletter from Up North News called Uplifting, where we always share a good story, something positive that is happening. And we want to make sure that when you see this in our newsletter, really read the whole thing, because some of these stories at first, like for this week, for example, we did a follow-up on the horrific death by suicide of a Wisconsin morning show anchor. But we will always contain something positive in there. And it's not like it's just one grain in there. The new addition to the story this week was that a Wisconsin couple, they bought the tree that Nina had decorated a couple of years ago for the town's festival of trees, just because they loved her personality and she, you know, showcase that in her tree, and they wanted something that she represented in their home. So they bought this before her passing a couple years ago. And then this week they dropped it off at the news station. And so now it sits in their lobby. It's Christmas in September, and it's bringing that sparkle that Nina once brought to their studios. And that's just one example of the type of stories that we're showcasing and uplifting. But we're giving people a reason to smile and showing them that that too is also still very much news, the same way that Trump makes news and President Biden makes news and Ron Johnson makes news. Also, positive things happening in our state, which happen every day in every city in many different ways, are equally news.
Christina makes us smile in all kinds of different ways. Yesterday's uplifting included first day of school photos for herself and for Sharita Booker, and a fifth grade picture for me. I'm not sure that was a real public service you did, but it probably made some people feel good.
Yeah, I mean, after looking at us, their third graders can only be cuter. Sharita, I can't speak for Sharita. Sharita's picture was very cute.
It was.
You and I, Pat. I feel like we might have been friends.
I think we
would have worked together on the projects. We had the same kind of bowl haircut style going, looked kind of nerdy. I don't know. I was the person who people actually really liked to work with because I do all the work for you.
Yeah, it's familiar.
I was annoying.
It's definitely familiar. Hey, can you hang on through the break here?
Yes.
All right. We'll take a quick break, a little bit more with Christina Lurie, then Ruth Conniff. You're up north. Back on a Friday morning, Up North News. Pat Kreitler here, along with Christina Lurie, who works on the uplifting segment for us at Up North News. Christina, you want to give us one or two examples of other stories you've either done or are working on?
Sure. We had some really good news out of Janesville this week. A little kid, he was about 7 years old, was shopping at Target with his mom when, like a lot of kids, you know, they spot a fire truck. And they just totally get in the zone. They want to know everything about that truck and they'd love to get on it. And this little boy also had Down syndrome. And the firefighters went above and beyond to make his day. They brought him on board their engine. They let him put on their gear. And I mean, it just shows you that whatever your job is, I mean, kids idolize garbage collectors. They idolize anyone who drives a truck. They also equally look up to their teachers, and they look up to doctors and nurses and all kinds of different people. So even if you might think your job is strange or not super interesting, if you see a little kid who's interested, it's a great teaching moment. And you can really give them an experience that they'll remember.
Oh, yeah. I've mentioned a few times that my three-year-old grandson, his favorite show is called Trash Truck. You know, it's a cartoon about a garbage truck on Netflix. So it's great that they were able to do that. And so the last thing I want to get in, Christina, is how can people let you know about some good news stories that may be worth putting into that section?
Yeah, so we've been really diligent. We make sure that all of these uplifting stories, they're labeled as uplifting. So, but shouldn't be too hard to tell. If you see a story and it makes you smile, it's probably part of that brand. So they always get on our social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you see any content there that you like and it reminds you of an idea, you can feel free to comment on that post. We'll see it. But one of the best, most direct ways would just be to email me directly at Christina. I spell my name Christina Lurie, Lurey, at upnorthnewswi.com. And I'll reach out to you. I'll respond back if you send me a note. And we just love to showcase the good that's happening in every corner of the state of Wisconsin. No story is too small. So please send us anything that makes you smile in the hopes that it'll make someone else smile. And we also are specifically looking for people helping people type of stories. So if there is some sort of way that people can make a difference in their communities, let us know about that too. That's also included in this brand.
All right. Thanks so much, Christina. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a great weekend.
Yes, you all as well. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Take care. Up next here on Up North News, Ruth Conniff joins us from the Wisconsin Examiner. We're going to talk a bit about the news outlet and also the book that she has published called Milked, How an American Crisis Brought Together Midwestern Dairy Farmers and Mexican Workers. Ruth, good to have you here. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. Let's go back first on the Wisconsin Examiner and talk about it. Once upon a time, in the beginning, there was darkness. There was no Wisconsin Examiner. There was no Up North News. There was just the same old stuff people had been seeing for 60 years. Where did Wisconsin Examiner come from?
Well, Wisconsin Examiner is part of a network of news outlets that cover state capitals across the country. The network's called States Newsroom, nonprofit, free news outlets. We're all online. We have a daily newsletter that's free you can sign up for. And we're covering state government. We're covering the legislature. And we're covering sort of what's happening in the state out around the rest of Wisconsin, not just in Madison. We have a 5-person bureau right next to the Capitol, and we run over there all the time, cover what's going on under the dome. And the idea of States Newsroom and Wisconsin Examiner is to begin to fill the gap on the decline of state news coverage all over the country, because there has been a precipitous decline. One example is when we were looking for office space downtown, we looked at the abandoned office space, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Madison Bureau. They now work from home. And so we're filling a gap. We feel, you know, there's not enough news coverage. There are some really excellent Capitol reporters in Madison, but you just don't get as much coverage of the state Capitol as you used to. And part of the problem with that, as we all know, is that policymaking is devolving more than ever to the states. You know, things that used to be regulated at the federal level, abortion rights, for example, voting rights, elections, that stuff is happening at the state level. And so it's more important than ever that the public know what's going on in state government. And yet there's less news coverage than there ever has been of state government.
We've talked about the bombshell that the Dobbs decision was repealing Roe v. Wade. And you're right, that feeds into becoming just a classic touch point as well for media in covering state capitals and state politics. Even just this morning, we played a 3-minute clip from a state senator in South Carolina as she explained or really tore into her fellow Republican men for, you know, considering an abortion ban that did not provide exceptions for rape and incest. And if, in fact, whether you agree with Dobbs or not, if this is going to turn into a checkerboard of 50 different state debates, then you do see a reason why those increasingly lonely state capitol bureaus probably have to be staffed up again, if not by legacy outlets, then by new ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so much going on, and it's so alarming. Of course, here in Wisconsin, now under our 19th century abortion ban, we have women who are scrambling across the border to try to find abortion services in Illinois and Minnesota. You know, we've done some coverage of the kinds of pressure that people who are, you know, have wanted pregnancies that have gone wrong and are terrified about what happens. Their doctors can't provide abortion until they begin to show signs of dying themselves. It's really dire. And it's really important that we talk about the real consequences of these policies and really look at how policy is being made.
Tell us more about States Newsroom and, you know, what its creation, how far widespread it is.
So there are 26 state capital news outlets like ours across the country. We were the 11th to launch 3 years ago. States Newsroom started out of North Carolina from a nonprofit news outlet called North Carolina Policy Watch that had been keeping an eye on North Carolina politics and policy for a long time. Had the idea to grow and began traveling to states and looking for editors. They've hired a lot of people who've been in the news business for a long, long time. So a lot of people who had been covering state news already for legacy news outlets have been hired by States Newsroom. You know, we started 3 years ago and staffed up. I hired Melanie Conklin as my deputy editor. She has now moved on. She's a super expert in Capitol News and was a great person to get the outlet going. Eric Gunn, who for a long time was the labor reporter in Milwaukee, from Milwaukee Journal, before it was a Journal Sentinel, and then had done a lot of freelance. I knew him through his work for Isthmus and the Progressive Magazine. We have a Milwaukee reporter, Isaiah Holmes, who has broken some big stories and won some big awards. particularly about police surveillance, police protester lists of protesters. It turned out he himself was on one of those lists. They were keeping an eye on him for covering the Wauwatosa Black Lives Matter protests. He won an award for that story. And then Henry Redman, who's a great local reporter, who actually recently graduated and had been working at a small paper in Wisconsin, and we snapped him up. And he's also done a bunch of award-winning reporting for us. So it's been really fun. We've had a lot to do, and we've been doing a good combination, I think, of getting out around the state and also covering what's going on in the Capitol.
Yeah, the awards page here at WisconsinExaminer.com is filling up, and that's a great thing to see from a digital outlet. And by the way, people ask sometimes, what do you mean you're a digital newsroom? And you know, what I tell people is, you know, we don't have a printing press and we don't have a transmitter. You know, we don't have a big tower because we're not coming into radio TVs. We're not printing something on paper. We're digital. We're on the internet, which means there's all kinds of ways to show up, whether it's on social media or a website like yours. And I don't know if this is for all of State's Newsroom or just for the Wisconsin Examiner, but how do you make your decision on the platforms that you decide you will or won't be on and the kind of format that stories will take? Because what I see primarily is what we would have called, you know, print stories, as opposed to, you know, there's not a lot of, I don't think you guys are on TikTok.
No, we're not on TikTok.
There's not a lot of video like that.
Yeah.
But I assume that's because of the focus on the content, on the reporting, and where people are used to seeing reporting about state politics is in the written word.
Yeah, I mean, it has to do with time, too, how much time we have to put. I mean, I love podcasts and radio, and I feel like that would be a good thing for us to add, and there are some States Newsroom outlets that have added that. I know from experience that doing podcasts and radio takes a whole lot of time. They say like an hour per minute when you're producing a story for audio. So we've been really focused on just getting the news. But we're hiring. We have a new reporter who's starting in October, and we have some young staff who have some skills. Isaiah's done a lot of filmmaking, and we have done some video based on that. So we may, as we get our feet on the ground in this new year, we may start to do some more of that video and audio reporting.
We've definitely had that over at Courier Newsroom and Up North News with leadership that basically wants to go where the audiences are. And so we had started off as primarily a website, and then we went into social media posts. And she has said, if I had the funds, I would have a TikTok bureau for everything, because you want to not lose that next generation of people who don't yet know they're going to be news consumers. And I think that's the important part about what you're doing in covering these things is, you know, everybody, almost except for the few of us weirdo kids who are news junkies, you know, a lot of news consumers come to it by something eventually comes to them. So you're creating this product, but you know, then the time's going to come where they're going to find you, and you can't just create that whole cloth. You've got to do it with experienced writers who then bring that product, you know, into an accessible place.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good to start by trying to make a really good product. And then I feel like a lot of the other part is promotion of that product. And it is important to reach people. And that is part of our mission. So right now we're creating a really good product. We're on Facebook and Twitter, and we send out a daily email newsletter. And I think the other aspects, as we have staff who have some skills in those areas, I think those are important for promotion. But we are creating a really good product to start.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, you know, the newsletter, I don't underestimate that a bit, because, again, I would argue our newsletter is probably our biggest product. We have a few more followers on Facebook, but, you know, again, with the algorithm, who knows how many people see your story, whereas you know how many people open up your newsletter. And that really, I think, might catch some people by surprise. But, I mean, there's people that subscribe to multiple newsletters a day, and that's, you know, to them something that they trust.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good way to reach people, I think.
What's your own background? You talked up all of your reporters, but let's hear more about your own path prior to getting to the Examiner.
So I worked at the Progressive magazine for many years, and I did pretty much every job there was there. I opened the Washington Bureau of the Progressive in 1997, came back when I got married in 2000, and was the editor-in-chief of the Progressive, then stepped away after Donald Trump became president to move to Mexico for a year with my family, which was the origin of the book that I just wrote. And have done a lot of freelance writing for a lot of outlets, and took this job when I was recruited for it, and you know, really came back to Wisconsin and decided we got to do something about what's happening here.
Oh, and a hell of a newsroom you've established. So that's a bit about Wisconsin Examiner from Ruth Conniff. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the book Milked that she has put together, and more about the, you know, the news headlines going on in Wisconsin these days with Ruth Conniff. If you'd like that other newsletter, the one that I put together for Up North News, go over to upnorthnewswi.com. Up in the top banner there, it says newsletter. Click on that. You'll be subscribed to that. Add that to your very well-balanced news diet. Don't you dare rely on just one thing. More with Ruth Conniff after this. You're Up North.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
All right, that was a complete and total lie. I'm not in Lake Wissota today, but back there Monday, and Monday's guest will be State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski, who'd also run for U.S. Senate this year and is now taking on other endeavors between now and Election Day. Back now with Ruth Conniff from the Wisconsin Examiner, who also has a book entitled Milked, How an American Crisis Brought Together Midwestern Dairy Farmers and Mexican Workers. And Ruth, you started to hint at that about your time in Mexico. Tell us about the overall premise of the book first.
So I started this book, like I said, my family and I decided to move to Mexico for a year. Kids went to school there. We had a great year in Oaxaca. Just as we were leaving, there was an article in the Wisconsin State Journal about a family of Mexican farm workers who were packing up and driving all the way back to Veracruz, leaving the dairy farm in Wisconsin where they had worked for almost 20 years. They had two little boys who were born in Wisconsin, who they brought with them back to Mexico. And in reading that article, I found out for the first time that about 80% of the labor on Wisconsin dairy farms is performed by undocumented immigrants, mostly from Mexico. It's a huge, huge amount. It's a long-term relationship. And so when I was in Mexico, I went and visited that family. I found that same truck parked on the street, and I toured the house that they had built with the money they made milking cows up north. And I started to learn more about the relationship between Wisconsin dairy farmers and Mexican workers who do all of this work on the farms. Over the last two decades or so, that relationship has really grown. As farmers have been under so much pressure to get big or get out and had to hire workers, many of them hired immigrant workers as their first employees on what had been family farms. And they have built this long-term relationship between Mexicans who come up, live on the farm, do a lot of work, save money, send it home to build homes and businesses back in Mexico, and then often replace themselves with their relatives or friends from that same little village in Mexico. So when I came back to Wisconsin from our year in Mexico, I traveled with a group of farmers who go down to Mexico every year to visit their workers' families and drive around bumping over these dirt roads and these little rural areas of Mexico and see what their workers have built there, which is really amazing.
This 80% figure still comes as a shock to me as somebody who married into a dairy farm family, you know, 35 years ago. And my wife was the oldest of six, and those six kids would go out and milk 72 cows and get on the school bus and come off the school bus and milk those 72 cows and do their homework and bale hay and everything else. There was no other labor. There were no hired hands, no immigrants, anything like that. But we knew at the time, and those were some of my first stories covering as a reporter, that, you know, the quote-unquote the farm crisis, that many farm families were giving up the farm. And in fact, my wife's family is no longer involved in dairy farming. The ones that stayed in it had to get bigger, bring on hired help. And, you know, now so much of it, as you said, is undocumented immigrants who really make up it. On the one hand, it takes away the romanticized notion of the Wisconsin farm family, but it is also, you know, I think it certainly is for me a wake-up call that, yeah, we still have a dairy industry here, but it's not what you think it is. And that means there are some issues like immigration that we have to pay attention to.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, Wisconsin is the number one state in the nation for farm bankruptcies. We've lost 1 to 2 dairy farms a day in recent years. And so this crisis is very real. One of the things that really interested me in writing the book is to understand how much rural Wisconsinites who run these dairy farms and undocumented immigrants have in common. They're really under pressure from the same global economic forces. And yet, of course, you know, the big political narrative is that it's rural Wisconsinites who help helped elect Trump in 2016, and undocumented immigration is a big Republican talking point this year. But yeah, we're so, our dairy industry is so dependent on undocumented immigrants, and they're mostly all undocumented because there is no such thing as a year-round visa for low-skilled agricultural work. So if you have a year-round industry like dairy, you can't get the seasonal visa that allow workers to legally pick crops like tomatoes and strawberries following the harvest. There is no category of visa that makes these workers legal. But it's fascinating to me how, you know, that kind of agrarian background that you're describing that farmers in Wisconsin have is very similar to the background of these Mexican workers. And what a lot of the farmers in my book say is they really felt like they had something in common. They felt like here are these hardworking people who like being outside, like working with animals, and have a very similar kind of orientation and cultural background to the farmers in Wisconsin. And I feel like that story of their friendship over these decades is kind of a hopeful story.
It makes complete sense because of their own probably great-grandparents who were doing the same thing, whether it was in, you know, Germany, Poland, Ireland, wherever, and, you know, sought opportunities, but again, came, you know, my family did the same thing. Initially it was South Dakota and then Minnesota, where they worked the land just like they did at some point in Europe or someplace else. So you absolutely see the similarities. And that's what makes it so, you know, bedeviling that, you know, we're instead having people trying to drive that wedge and always talking about, you know, migrant caravans and invaders and everything else. None of that would be necessary, or very little of it would be necessary, if at some point in the past 30 years, Democrats and Republicans, especially Republicans, could get together and embrace legal immigration reform. Just that one visa that you talked about, that never even occurred to me that was something, but that's something Washington could have taken seriously decades ago people wanted to. There's a whole a political class that just doesn't want to.
Well, the sad thing is there was this moment of opportunity in 2014 where it seemed like we were going to get comprehensive immigration reform, and it fell apart. The bipartisan coalition that was so close fell apart. And ever since then, Republicans have really moved away. They haven't been willing to come back to the table and talk about, let's be realistic, we have an economy that is absolutely dependent on these folks. And so when Ron Johnson hints about replacement theory, this fringe right-wing notion that Democrats are trying to bring immigrants across the border so that these brown people are going to replace white people and take their jobs, dairy farmers in Wisconsin know that's ridiculous. They can't find local workers to do these jobs. The only people they could find were undocumented immigrants from Mexico. So, and, you know, who also, by the way, commit crimes at a far lower rate than people who were born in this country. So the whole kind of scary image of undocumented immigrants flowing across the border as a threat, it's just completely contrary to the economic reality and social reality that we're living. And you know who knows that? Tim Michels, who was the head of the lobby group for the road builders that wanted to make it okay for employers to hire undocumented immigrants, wanted to lobbied hard to stave off a bill in the Wisconsin legislature that would have withheld government contracts from construction companies that employed undocumented immigrants. Well, Michels pretends that he didn't even know that bill was going on when he was the president of the board of that group. But of course, folks in industry know, you know, they're heavily reliant, whether it's hospitality, construction, or most of all agriculture, on undocumented immigrants. So recognizing that reality and having a common sense solution should be a winning idea.
The candidate who talked about building a prototype of the wall and who had to end one of his commercials with a variation on, it's not racist, but, you know, in talking about his stance on immigration, he knows better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so phony.
It's something that has, I think, flown under the radar here, perhaps for the reason that when we hear about undocumented immigrants and crackdowns on them, it's usually in some place that is more densely packed. A meatpacking plant would be your classic example, and there's others as well. You very rarely hear about, you know, raids on farms because, again, you're only talking a few people here, a few people here, a few people there. And that's why I think this book and your stories will catch a lot of people because, again, that 80% figure would blindside a lot of folks the way that that has flown under the radar the way that it has.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And like you said, you know, there were previous waves of immigrants. We're all the children of immigrants, unless we're Native American, who came to farm in Wisconsin. And there are farmers, including John Rosenau, who's one of the farmers in my book, who sees Mexican immigrants as being similar to his own family members who came over from Switzerland and Germany and wants to see them take over farming. He has such a positive long-term relationship with some of the workers on his farm. He's hoping to hand off his farm to them through an employee ownership scheme. And we'll see if he pulls that off. But that's a big question in rural Wisconsin right now. You go to Arcadia, which is a largely Hispanic town.
Bring that up. Yes.
Yeah. You got, you know, a town that's been revitalized by immigrants. The businesses on Main Street, whether it's the Mexican grocery store or restaurant, the school, which is 75% Hispanic. It's because of these immigrants, this immigrant workforce, mostly for Ashley Furniture, the largest manufacturer of furniture in the world, that have revitalized Arcadia. They have not yet achieved political power. And the mayor of Arcadia became famous a while back because he was such an anti-sanctuary mayor and he wanted to make it illegal to fly another nationality's flag. And he didn't want to let people have things, documents translated into Spanish. He lost. He was run out of office. And the question now is, could a town like Arcadia see a political leadership and business leadership that is Spanish speaking and really for that next wave of immigration to be complete, for folks to really become the residents and business owners and political leaders of rural towns in Wisconsin? It's very possible.
It comes back to something I was saying about the passing of Queen Elizabeth and how the UK became more multicultural as a result of the way that the Commonwealth developed as the empire shrunk. And the shortcomings that we have here in, again, in embracing diversity and that multiculturalism, and we still see it in our politics today that, you know, the going after school districts for, again, just wanting to teach diversity, be honest about our past history. And so you're right in that Arcadia is one of those places to watch, along with some other school districts and cities that are being sued by right-wing legal firms, in that never-ending fight to try to embrace our humanity and not try to defend the old ways simply because they're the way we've always done things.
Yeah, and just scapegoating and racism. Yes. I mean, it's so easy to pick on people who are powerless and who look different from you. That's why I find it so hopeful to talk to these farmers and to really explore this long-term relationship, because some of these guys in my book are, you know, in their 60s, 70s, pushing 80, and they have really made an effort because of the transition they were forced to make by the changes in the dairy industry. They started taking Spanish classes in the Alma High School after hours, and then the Spanish teacher, Sean Duval of Alma, created this nonprofit called Bridges Puente. She was translating for farmers on their farms, trying to help the workers and the farmers communicate. She started this annual trip, taking the farmers down to Mexico. And to see people really stretch and learn something new and have a real kind of opening experience of getting to know somebody who's different, who speaks a different language, traveling to a very different part of the world, it's encouraging.
I have to say, though, with this back and forth over the border that you talk about, I just wonder how, is there something that's facilitating that all of these workers, are they all coming up organically, or is there something more organized that just kind of gets a wink and a nod so that we can get those workers in Wisconsin?
So I think all of the risk is assumed by the workers themselves. And the workers that I talked to for my book did things like smuggle themselves across the border in the trunk of a car, you know, walk across the desert and crouch down and hide behind rocks when immigration went by. I mean, they take a lot of risk and they spend a lot of money. The price of crossing the border, as it's become increasingly militarized, has gone way up. So it costs about $11,000 right now. It takes you most of a year working on a dairy farm to pay your relatives back who loaned you the money to cross. And the other consequence of that is that people stay for a lot longer because a lot of times people are caught trying to cross. And so they don't feel that they can go back and forth easily. So families end up spending a decade or more separated because they're trying to make this nut here. You know, there's not enough jobs in these rural towns in Mexico, and the pay is very low. And because of NAFTA, people were driven off their land, can't make it as subsistence farmers anymore. So they're here keeping their heads down, working long hours, 6 days a week, making money, sending it home with this plan to eventually go home.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's not in the book, and I've only got a couple of seconds to touch, or I don't know if it's in the book or not, is that if immigrants are able to take ownership of this, I sense that would be better for the land and the resources as well, because that's always the case, is that the person who's on the land is going to take care of it better than some distant corporation.
Yeah.
If it becomes a factory farm.
Yeah.
Another dimension, and so much more that I'm sure you're going to continue to cover. Milked is the name of the book by Ruth Conniff, done by the New Press. And you can read her daily work on the Wisconsin Examiner at wisconsinexaminer.com. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great to be with you, Pat.
Great to talk to you as well. We'll wrap up today's conversation after this. You're up north. In we go. It's a home stretch before we get to the weekend here. I was telling you earlier about the hassles of using a slower laptop instead of the desktop, and I was trying to pull up who we have on next week. I know it's Sarah Godlewski at 8 o'clock on Monday. And, oh, there we go. We're going to wrap up next week with Susan Lampert-Smith, who's going to tell us about some of her freelance stories for us for Travels. Joe Zepecki will join us on Thursday. And I falsely advertised the return of Kirk Bangsted this Wednesday. It's actually next Wednesday, along with Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who will join us as well. And then I'm hoping Monday, along with Sarah Godlewski, to have a positive report on both the farmer's market, despite Luke's complete lack of great recommendations.
What? I gave you so many recommendations. I just was on the spot. I had to think of them for a second.
And the Brewers game that I'm hoping to get to, and see if I slip into Miller Park or if I stick with American Family Field over the next couple of days here. And what kind of high price goodie will I get? Because you've seen the dad shirt, kind of the Hawaiian thing with the Brewers logo. Now we got to see what else I can pull back from there. Do you need me to pick up anything while I'm out there for you?
I'm good. I will be in Milwaukee tomorrow as well. But I'm not going to the game. My nephew's birthday is next week, so there is a giant bouncy house party tomorrow that I'm looking forward to.
For the kids, right? Or are the adults allowed in the bouncy house too?
I don't know the rules yet, but we'll see.
Okay.
I'll report back on Monday.
Unless a gust of wind, just takes you away. And this, again, is your way of saying no Iron Man for you? This is your
no Iron Man for me.
Are not a part of this?
No, the volleyball on Wednesday nights is what's keeping me active. I don't need to try to do that. No, I can't do. No, okay. No.
Well, whatever we're doing for the weekend here is going to come with a chance of rain all the way through it, unfortunately, and that is just part of life here. What I'm hoping for is that we don't get like any kind of thunderstorms with wind, because now I'm getting into that time of year where it just takes one thunderstorm, one windy thunderstorm, and next thing you know, you don't get your fall colors the way that you did if it blows a lot of those off the tree as they're starting to weaken. And we love having everybody come up north to look at fall colors. Luke, I might actually invite you to Lake Wasota. Yeah, come autumn just for that.
Oh, all right. I'll be keeping an eye out for the mailbox.
I just don't know that you, I mean, this hearing that you're in Milwaukee, I just didn't even know if you got out of Madison. I always get the impression that once you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. Once they join the cult of Madison, they never get out, because, I mean, there's all these bike trails and all these markets and everything else. So The road actually works both ways out of here.
It does. I went to Door County last weekend.
Well, that's an extension of Madison. I mean, come on, that's a suburb. That's not.
It's an extension of Madison. It's 3.5-hour drive for me to get up there.
I know, but it's like Madison North is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Here. Well, there are a lot of Illinois Flatlanders there too, and as here in Madison, so I can see the similarities a little bit.
There will be an election coming up here in less than 60 days now, but it's also worth noting there will be an election next April. And don't go running off and screaming yet. The reason I'm bringing it up is that there's going to be an extremely important election for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And we learned this week that a former Supreme Court justice, no, I'm not talking about Michael Gableman, but I'm talking about another right wing.
I'm still expecting Michael Gableman to throw his name in the ring for this one.
I don't know. He's got that. He's got a pretty good paying job now with one of those right wing legal groups. So, whereas for whatever reason, maybe Dan Kelly didn't get one of those, which is why he has announced that even though he was bounced from the state Supreme Court a couple of years back, he's going to run for the spot that's going to open up in 2023. That is for the seat that is currently occupied by Pat Rogensack. She is a conservative justice, former chief justice, and she is not seeking re-election in April. So that means a court that is currently controlled by conservatives 4-3 could flip depending on who wins this seat. There are two progressive candidates who have already announced. There's Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz, and there's Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell. So already we know that between the two of them, and now with conservative justice, former Justice Dan Kelly getting in the race, there will be a primary in February. And this is a nonpartisan race, ostensibly. But it means that there will be a primary, and then the top two vote getters in February will advance to the general election in April. And so Kelly is going to be the one at this point to he's going to be the only conservative in the race so far as we know. He was never elected to the court. He was appointed to the court in 2016 by Scott Walker. But then in 2020, when he ran for a full term, he lost to now progressive justice Jill Karofsky, who is one of the three progressive members of the court. And do we think that former Justice Dan Kelly has learned much from his loss? Well, no. Listen to this quote. "I am incredibly grateful to those all over the state who have encouraged me to run." First off, I don't know that anybody ever does that. It's a state Supreme Court race, for goodness sakes. "They know the importance of electing a justice with a track record of protecting our Constitution, faithfully applying the law as written, and respecting the people of Wisconsin. If an activist were to win next April, Wisconsin's public policy would be imposed by four lawyers sitting in Madison instead of being adopted through our constitutional processes. I won't let that happen on my watch," said once and perhaps future right-wing activist Dan Kelly. Let's not kid ourselves. The courts right now, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin and the Supreme Court of the United States, are controlled by activists. It's activists who would repeal something at the national level like Roe v. Wade and remove a constitutional right that has been in place for nearly half a century. It is an activist court on the right wing that would make up a reason to say that drop boxes, which have been used cycle after cycle in Wisconsin, are now suddenly illegal. So we're not really going to let somebody get away with saying that a progressive majority court is somehow activist. We know who the activists are that are cloaking themselves in judges' robes. But what I will tell you is that with him getting in the race and assuring that there's a true right versus left battle, it is going to be a long campaign. It's going to start right after the November election. It's going to be expensive. It's not going to be pretty. And it is going to be, again, one of the most important elections that, coming right off the one that's in November, get ready to vote again next spring. That's how democracy works here, as long as we've got it and as long as you're willing to protect it. Thanks so much for joining us up north. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.